Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to The Middle Ground on the Coffee Party USA Internet Radio Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. The Middle Ground looks at today's political issues from left, right, and center. We're always civil and always looking for that middle ground where real conversation begins. You're here tonight with hosts Eric Beiler and Michael Charney. We thank you for joining us and hope you enjoy the next hour of The Middle Ground.
Good evening, everyone. Eric Beiler here. No Michael Charney until the first show of July, which means we've almost survived. But I will do my best to hold the middle ground, even though we don't have our Republican perspective. I'm half Republican. I was raised Republican. I'm going to try to hold that middle ground as we talk about a thorny issue, the NSA spying that we are revisiting in the wake of the new revelations about internet data being collected by the NSA. I think in the time since we were talking about warrantless wiretapping of phones, back when President Bush was the face of the federal government, we've really grown into the information age, and Facebook has become a very personal sort of thumbprint of our personas. And the same is true for other platforms that we use, of course. And so this is a more personal issue than it would have been, let's say, if it was 2005 or 2006, and we're talking about metadata coming from the internet. So that's the first point that I want to make about this. We're going to go to callers, 646-929-2495, because I'm not really sure how I feel about it. And second of all, I've been so busy making this new film with Annabelle Park, Story of America, that I haven't had time to read very much about this issue. So I want to hear from you guys. 646-929-2495 is the number, because I'll just go back to how I felt when Bush was president. I'll be very honest. But first of all, you have to know, raised Republican, very, very conservative. Father was influential on me growing up. He's a military guy, then went to work for the federal government. He's in federal law enforcement. And he was a proponent of the Patriot Act before there was a Patriot Act. In case you hadn't guessed, they were working on the Patriot Act in case there was an attack such as the September 11th attacks. That's why this 80,000-page law was already ready to go. My dad, he works for the Justice Department. He trains new recruits into the various agencies on international law and on American law. And basically that line that you need to come up against when you're trying to keep people safe and at the same time respect our rights. So he's something of, I guess you could say, an expert in the more neocon variety on the issue. And he was talking to me about this before September 11th, the need for the agencies to share information all of the things that were put in place after the Church hearings during the Nixon administration that really get in the way, he felt, of law enforcement keeping us safe. And I'm someone who, when the bombs dropped on Iraq in 2003, supported the idea. Because, again, with this conservative upbringing, I was definitely shell-shocked by the September 11th attacks. My father, who worked across the street from the Pentagon at the time, was a witness to the plane that hit the Pentagon. My sister, who's also in federal law enforcement, was assigned to investigate the attacks up in Boston. And so, I think many Americans were We were caught up in basically the hysteria, and we wanted to be able to trust our leaders. Something you heard me say to Lawrence Wilkerson on this show a few months ago. With new information, I changed my opinion on that. And so in this case, I remember when warrantless wiretapping was revealed, and my first thought was, well, I got nothing to hide. And my second thought was, when you're talking about human life and you're talking about the psychic impact, psychological impact of terrorist attacks, if we can do something to prevent them, I felt at that time that it's a fair trade, especially in these harrowing times. I did give some consideration to the fact that the information could be used for political purposes the way that President Nixon had. I remember hearing that the FBI was looking into granny bake sales for peace during the Iraq War or something like that. And that sounded upsetting. And I had bought into that sort of stuff enough that I remember by the time John Kerry challenged George Bush for a second term, I was pretty strongly, against George Bush. And I remember getting pulled over for some sort of like 5 mile an hour over the speed limit thing in a residential area while I was volunteering for John Kerry in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I asked the police officer if it was because I had an Asian Americans for John Kerry bumper sticker on my car. So I can understand that paranoia, and I can even feel for the extreme conservatives who do consume Fox News media products. And the IRS thing, makes them feel like, well, that means the government, government power can be abused to single me out. And then they hear about this. That means all my phone calls and all my internet transmissions are in this metadata thing. And there's certain triggers that are supposed to make it allowable for people to look at that. But who's really, who's really controlling that? Who's really monitoring that? I'm making fun of Sean Hannity for basically reading a completely different script depending on who's in the White House. But a lot of people, I think, ask themselves, to what degree can I trust the federal government not to abuse this power for political purposes? And then they base their feelings about this kind of domestic spying on that. And I think that is understandable. To some degree, I think I feel that way, although, I don't think, well, let me just put it this way. I didn't ask myself to the same degree whether Barack Obama's administration would abuse that, abuse the power in this way, the way that I did during the Bush administration. Of course, this wasn't an ideological thing during the Bush administration. It was more evidentiary because of the way the Justice Department had been abused to go after the political enemies of the Bush administration and the Republican Party, and to the point of even putting people in jail. I'll just open up by saying that, and then I hope you guys will call in and give me your take. And also, for those of you who have had time to watch the way that the news has covered this, I want you to share with us what you've gleaned from the Republican news channel, Fox News, and the Democratic news channel, or the liberal one anyway, MSNBC. What is CNN having to say about this? Today we'll also share some of what is happening in North Carolina. It's become sort of a national question, what the heck is going on in North Carolina? And to the chagrin of many people here, there are people in Mississippi and Alabama who are looking at North Carolina and thinking, God, they are so backward. I'll let you know what happened last night at the 7th Moral Monday protest. Just as a hint, it is continuing to grow, and it's surprising me, as close as I've been to it. that even if the leader, Reverend Dr. William Barber, isn't able to attend because he's at a national meeting of similar, a similar cause, basically to create a New South kind of coalition to fight against Old South politics. He missed last week. It was still an enormous rally. And again today, I thought, man, are people going to get tired of this? Is the heat going to keep them away? No, it didn't. There were, I guess I could say, 1,000, 1,500 people there, just as there had been the two previous weeks. And they just tried to stand in the shade the best they could. And then inside the chamber, it was a zoo. I could barely film. There were so many people there. And when I share footage, you'll see it really starting to look like Wisconsin in there. So I see people are on the boards. Hit one if you're ready to come on the show with me. Otherwise, I won't call on you because of the Howard Berkowitz rule. And for those of you who aren't familiar, haven't been listening to the show, I bring this up every once in a while. Howard Berkowitz is a frequent caller from Massachusetts. When Coffee Party Radio was young and we didn't really know how to use the board, we called upon him without him having raised his hand. He was in the middle of eating some honey roasted peanuts and nearly choked, he said. So 518 area code, I see that you are ready to share your thoughts on the NSA spying issue or other issues that we are facing in America today. Let us know your name, where you're calling from, what's on your mind.
Thank you, Eric. Joe Pomponio in Albany, New York. And, I'm going to kind of delve into both a little more on the NSA issue. If I have to go through background on this, simply put, your father's right. We need a national security agency. I don't believe we need one run by private corporations, but yeah, we do need one. Now, this issue broke out for me when I was in Paris in 2003. A gendarme for the French police happened to be on break. We had some conversation. He brought this up to me. I was very upset about Iraq. Iraq was in a box. I could see no conceivable reason why we were doing that. But he went on to outline how, in their view in Europe, they were looking at the Patriot Act as a type of Mein Kampf. And he outlined why. Just, let's boil it down to some simple facts. There are no checks and balances. Now, at that time, and it was terribly abused, what developed later, President Obama came in, he put restraints on it. That's good. I commend him for that. He's not a king. He can't rule by dictate. I give him a lot of slack in this. The people responsible for this are unaccountable. That's my problem. There are no checks and balances. There's no recourse if anybody is inadvertently damaged by it. Now, to date, I have to be fair. Nobody's come forward and said that they've been damaged by this. It's come out recently on CNN, MSNBC, and RT that the police agencies seem to have some roundabout way of getting at it. Now, that's something I think should be addressed and stopped. But if I could give some balance to what they are trying to do, number one, I held a security clearance when I was in the military. Number two, I've done private investigation work, okay? I've done credit check work. I was a skip tracer. What I piece together from what they're giving me is they essentially are taking those type of skills to the 10th power, if people understand what I'm talking about. And from other background that I've done with regard to cyber wars in general, I'm afraid it is warranted. Now, you should bear in mind, they should not be listening in. I personally don't think they can, not with 300 million people in the country. I don't think they have the capacity to record everybody's phone calls. Can they tap in? Maybe some rogue person with certain skills would have that ability. I'd have to have that demonstrated to me. Other than that, you know, we're in the type of environment worldwide where we do have to step up. And if that's the case, I can accept it. But I want checks and balances, and I want recourse. I'm pointing that out because I was on the road today, so I couldn't really look into it. But I understand that these corporations that we contract this out to are looking for amnesty. In other words, they don't want to be sued. Monsanto comes to mind for some reason on that. I won't go into that. But if they're looking for protection, I have suspicions. You brought up the fact that you're Asian, mixed Asian. I dated one Asian when I was in school. And I can tell you from that experience and other experiences through my life, Americans seem to have this, I'm going to put it simply, WASP attitude, okay, that, you know, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants rule. Now, it's diminished. I'm not going to say it's as bad as it was, but it's still there. It's just directed in other areas. And if you put that together with people that get elected or become involved in government, those biases come forward. And I think that, in a large part, is what's being manifested now. The system has been in place. It's got to be improved. When I first understood it, I wanted it repealed. All right? When I learned more about generally what's going on in the world with regard to this, okay, and I could point out things, but I don't want to waste too much time here. It is prevalent. It's also a business. Private industry does this all the time. And as I've known since the day I got on the web, what I put out there, I'm putting out to a third party. It's not a sealed conversation going through the mail to someone else. It's out there. And I take the risk that someone with the skills can get in there and read it. So, yeah, I mean, I have this built-in caution about it. On the other hand, you know, when I want to sound off, I hope somebody comes after me for it. You know, I kind of hope they're listening in to Blog Talk Radio, but they don't have to. Well, I'm not. They can go get it and just listen to it themselves. The North Carolina issue, if I could move on to that briefly. I've seen some reports on it. And I do admire what they're doing. I draw a correlation between North Carolina and Wisconsin. My only regret at this moment is I can't go down there. Okay. my feeling at my age, rather than see young people possibly stained by having an arrest record for whatever minor reason that somebody might decide to use against them. If they come after me, I really don't care. You know, I'm not going out for a job. I don't have a career future. So, you know, that would be a beneficial thing. It's another reason I think you see reluctance upon young people to kind of get involved in that type of, situation. Now, this whole matter can be cured or fixed. It's not something that will happen overnight. But, you know, as bad as this may sound to members of the extreme left, and, you know, I have issues with RTTV and MSNBC, some of my favorites. they're taking, and I'm on their side, don't get me wrong, I'm an independent. But they're doing the same thing the right is doing. and they're not
really
focusing on the issue. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're in one case trying to demonize someone, and in the other case they're trying to make them a hero. And, you know, when you look at this, okay, this is not a situation that someone like Thomas Drake encountered. Now, if you want to pick on somebody to be a whistleblower hero, in my view, and I just found out about him now, if you check the videos, this man was after them since 1999, before all this started, okay? And you want a hero, there's your hero. I don't want to elaborate on it. I know we have other scholars, so I'll leave that at that. Go ahead.
Well, I'll come back to you when we get to North Carolina. I'll get some more thoughts of you on that. I got three callers, 661-770 and 724 I'm going to get to first. I assume they're going to talk about NSA, and I'll bring you back to Joe to comment on North Carolina some more. Okay, 661 area codes. You are on the middle ground. Let us know your name, where you're calling from, and what's on your mind.
My name is Paul. I'm in Georgia, from New England. And, one of the main things that's on my mind here is I became a member of Blog Talk Radio a while ago because I wanted to do a chat with Coffee Party, and I got this email telling me about your radio show, and there is one sentence here that I find really disturbing and practically offensive. Says that unlike the TV writers at Fox News, I remember grappling with this when the president was white and Republican. I've been called racist numerous times for not approving of the president's job performance. And I find it very discouraging, very frustrating, and pretty sickening that we have to resort to talking about a person's skin color. You know, it's really pathetic. You know, I've told numerous people, you know, that, you know, specifics on what I don't like about what the president is doing. They said, "Oh, you're just racist." That I find it really offensive, and I find the presentation of that in the presence of that in the email offensive. Who cares what his skin color is? And for years, it's been Republican versus Democrat, which is really ridiculous in itself. It shows how brainwashed American citizens are. But now that we have a black president, it has to be about skin color, too. I'm thinking, hey, can we get past that?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, Paul, I wrote that sentence, and I apologize if it offended you. I do understand where you're coming from, absolutely. I am half Asian, as Joe mentioned, but I guess you could say I passed for white, and I certainly have during my post-adolescent years passed for white. And I had an interesting experience in Alabama recently, where I was interviewing a very aggressive. I'm gonna let you respond in a moment, just me and you, because there's a little background noise, Paul. A very aggressive advocate for, actually, I wouldn't say she's an advocate. What she is she opposes Confederate pride or white. Basically, there's a group in Selma, Alabama, called the Daughters of the Confederacy, and they and others in the town sort of resent the civil rights theming of Selma, Alabama, because of Bloody Sunday and the Edmund Pettus Bridge and all that. And so they would prefer the town be known for the Civil War and for Confederate pride. And so they have, you know, they do a commemoration of the Battle of Selma. It was one of the last Civil War battles every year. Sort of competes with the commemoration of the bridge crossing. And they also have erected a statue, a monument to the founder of the Ku Klux Klan, General I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Forrest. And so there's this African-American woman who's leading the charge to have the statue removed. And she's been accused, and many people believe it's true, that she encouraged someone to steal the bust off of that statue, so it has no head. It has lots of writing, though, that praises General Forrest. And so I asked her a question. It was just during an interview that was for a documentary, and I said, can you understand that this is the heritage of, you know, your neighbors in Selma? This is their heritage. They want to be proud of their ancestors. And in a sense that this is a kind of diversity, that we have to respect the diversity of the South, the diversity of Alabama, and there are people who wish to honor their ancestors in this way. Do you think it's a diversity issue? And she sort of hit me with this, you can't understand because you're not black, or even, you know, hinging upon, I must be racist because I asked that question. So I do understand how painful that is, and it is unfair when people don't look at the substance of what you're saying and then say, Paul, you must be racist because you have that view. So I apologize. Did you want to respond to that part of it?
You know, people are the way they are. You know, the whole racist thing has been getting brought up ever since, you know, Barack Obama was just a candidate. And when he was debating with John McCain, I was looking at them thinking to myself, you know, he's going to get elected, you know, and people voted for him because he's black. You know, it's, you know, the whole thing is just, it's really ignorant. I mean, people are going to be the way they are. And I've dealt with people that, you know, that look at a person's skin color. I don't. Unfortunately, a lot of times when I look at a person, I'll look at their skin color only to determine possibly what their attitude could be toward me. I'm white. I'm not going to say I'm proud to be white. What I will say is that, you know, hey, that's where I was born, you know. I've had friends of all different skin tones, all different nationalities. It, you know, it's like the President Obama revived the racism in this country and has done nothing but divide this country. We don't need that.
Well, Paul, thank you much for sharing that perspective. You know, first of all, to respond directly to the idea that Barack Obama himself is the reason for the division that we see in our country, and it being at, you know, the highest level I've seen in my lifetime, and you know, many say the highest since the Civil Rights Movement or even since the Civil War. I think it is true that his ethnicity is the cause of a lot of that division. I think that there are strains of intolerance, as you know, Colin Powell referred to it, in America that are always going to be there, but they're especially, I think we're more, well, let me just put it this way. That sentence that you object to is my commentary not on people, but on media products that people consume. And we all see commercials, and we're all influenced by them. And we all see commercials disguised as news, and we're influenced by that as well. And my commentary is that I feel that since Barack Obama's election in 2008, that media products that are designed to rally the conservative base have used race in order to frighten and provoke a kind of hysteria, and really, in this case, but in many cases, incredible hypocrisy. And this sort of fact-free historical amnesia in order to try to essentially say, you see what happens when the president is black, everything goes to hell. You know, the way that they will point to places where the city government is black and say, you see, that's why there's crime there, or that's why there are problems there, or that's why their budget is in the red. It's because black people just can't lead. Right, black people can't be quarterbacks on football teams or head coaches. They just can't lead. And so I do think that there's this, you know, it's one of the veins this historical sort of reservoirs of fear that has existed in this country since its inception, the fear of an empowered voting black citizenry. And in some cases, in the South especially, a fusion, a coalition between more progressive whites and blacks that many Americans fear, and Barack Obama embodies that. And so I think rather than coping with that fear in a more of a 21st century way, what we've seen, especially in the media products that are designed for conservative consumers, we've seen an exploitation of not only that fear, but all the propaganda that has been used to stoke that fear since we started to contemplate emancipation or other ways of resolving the slavery issue in the 1830s and even before. But thank you for pointing that out, Paul. I apologize if it made you feel as if I was implying that a person is racist, as opposed to basically the scripting of a soap opera, which I feel is racist, the Fox News Channel soap opera. We're going to go to 770 area code next. You are on the middle ground. Let us know your name and where you're calling from and what's on your mind.
Hey, guys. It's Patrick Thompson calling from the Atlanta area.
Hey, Patrick.
Back to the NSA topic. I used to work for a software company. About 20 years ago, we came up with a product that would stop third-class mail that you didn't really want, that was going to go in the trash anyway, from coming to your home. So you'd only get stuff that you probably were interested in buying or probably interested in looking at. The product was called Marketplace. A lot of people that we tested it with, we liked it. They said, hey, yeah, it's great. Then I get a lot less trash and get a lot less mail that I'm not going to keep anyway. I hate all that stuff in my mail. So as we proceeded to bring the product to market, ACLU came out and said, oh, you absolutely cannot do that. You cannot know what people are buying. You cannot know what people are buying by street or neighborhood. You're just not allowed to do that. That's breaking into people's privacy. Mm-hmm. So when we went before Congress to do proceedings on this, they asked us where did you get the data? And what do you think our answer was? Anybody today can do this. We bought the data from the U.S. Postal Service.
Hmm.
And this is where I think it's a real coffee party issue, because the real question is, where did the Postal Service get it? They got it from the companies that use the Postal Service. And that is exactly what's going on today. The government isn't spying on us. The companies are spying on us. Every day, my information is bought and sold across the universe of the Internet. The banks, the credit card information, my buying preferences, where I shopped, why I shopped there, how much I bought, what kinds of things I bought. That's all tracked. Whether I opt in or not, there's this big thing about opting in. Well, if you're using the system, you're opting in. And if you don't believe this, you know, use Google and search for a few things and watch what kind of ads show up in Google. You know, Bing is making a big fuss over this about, you know, hey, we don't spy on you like Google does. This is the source of the spying, and we're allowing companies to do more and more of it without saying a whole lot about it. So you want to know so look at the heart of this thing. It's not even being reported on. Where is the information coming from? It's coming from the companies. The government goes and gets it from these companies, just like any other company that wants to sell to you. That's where they're getting the information. So I do have to say, I think, you know, overall, we do need something like this to make sure that we don't have people talking to and making arrangements for terrorist acts, but that doesn't mean they can trample all over our security and I think our privacy, and I think that's where, you know, things like the FISA court and having to have a warrant to get information on a U.S. citizen, I think is the right approach. There needs to be safeguards in there. we need to feel good about the fact that spying is going to take place. It's always taken place. It's probably the second oldest profession. It's just out there. It's been there forever and ever since countries existed, and since you know, different entities existed, different kingdoms existed. So I think it's going to be there, but we have to live with it. But we do need to feel safe and secure about it. And I think the media is just running rampant. I mean, they love this because this is selling more eyeballs, selling more newspapers, whatever they're selling. This is great for them. It's been going on. You know, they're acting like this is a brand new story. This is not a brand new story. It's been right underneath our feet.
That is true. The news media likes to present stuff that we've known for a long time as a brand new story because it's gonna get people who don't, you know, who basically haven't been paying much attention. And that's most Americans, right? We're all just trying to get by. But it's going to drag those people in because they think it's breaking news that the government collects data on our phone calls and our internet transmissions. You touched on an important point, though, is that it's a question of balance between security and privacy that in a democracy we need to make as a people. The people need to make this decision. And that's essentially what government is, right? The government is an exercise of the will of the people. So that's why I'm not angry with the person who exposed this information. I don't consider him to be a traitor because we needed to know this information. We need to have this information in order to make these decisions. I can understand that there are reasons why they wanted to keep it secret so that the terrorists don't know, you know, the inner workings of how they are being surveilled, but I think it was in the public interest that this information come out, and you have to admire the courage of this person because, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name, but do you know his name, Patrick?
Snowden.
Yeah, Snowden. You have to admire his courage because he knows now that, you know, basically the most powerful empire that has ever, you know, existed on Earth is now after him. And that must be a really scary feeling. I can tell you it was scary for me when the Los Angeles Police Department decided that I was unlawfully documenting an unlawful assembly and arrested me during the Occupy movement. That was scary to have the city government you take away your freedom. But when the federal government is after you and chasing you around the globe, it must be a frightening thing. Do you agree with that? Do you feel that Snowden did the country a service by sharing this information?
Yes and no. I mean, he is a person who's gotten top secret clearance, and I've had that in the past. When you do that and when you work for the government, even if you're a contractor, you sign up for certain things. You sign up, hey, if you ever reveal X, Y, and Z, you will be prosecuted. I mean, you sign the paper when you do that. Now, I understand he has a conscience, so he probably shouldn't have been doing that job. It's one of those jobs you have to do without a conscience. And, you know, I'm not sure he's all together. I'm not sure we know the whole story yet. I'm not sure he's a guy that has everything all together. Maybe he shouldn't have had that job. You know, and I'm very wary of the stories that come out. You know, his girlfriend is a pole dancer. Okay, where did that come from? Who is that story? Yeah, and why? You know, that's an obvious let's discredit this guy type thing. Now it may be true, but if it is true, why do you have a top secret clearance? That's exactly the kind of thing that when you sign up for a top secret clearance, they ask you all these obfuscatory questions. They really want to know whether you can be bent some way. You know, if you have something that another country could use against you. Do you have credit problems? Are you gay? Are you an adulterer? They're looking for those kinds of things that some other country could use against you and get you to leak information. So I'm not sure we have the whole story yet. I wouldn't call the guy anything at this point other than a strong person with a conscience about what he was doing. Helped out about. I'm not sure I don't think he obviously did not have to go to China. I think there are channels here he could have taken advantage of, even though, you know, I know he was scared. But again, I'm not sure we have the whole story. I'm not sure we ever will know the whole story.
Mm. Patrick, thank you so much for the call. And I want to clarify, I'm not saying that I don't think you should be prosecuted. It is the law. It's the law as it stands on the books today. He should be prosecuted. But I'm not personally angry with him. That's what I was trying to say. Okay, we're going to go to 724 and then to 404. 724, you're on the Middle Ground on Coffee Party Radio. Let us know your name, where you're calling from, and what's on your mind.
Hi, Eric. This is Greg in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Greg.
I thought I would... How are you? I thought I would... No problem. I thought I would offer maybe just a bit of a technical insight into perhaps what the NSA and people with the knowledge and the access to technology might actually be able to do. When I was in the telecommunications industry and I was in engineering and operations back in the mid to late 80s, it was an extremely simple proposition to listen into a phone call. That idea that an NSA analyst could potentially have access to a live conversation today strikes me as eminently possible, even though the technology has changed in terms of the way that voice conversations are encoded and transmitted across networks. The notion that any kind of a network cannot be monitored down to a channel is, at least to my experience and to my assumptions about the actual operations of them today, seems Pollyannish at best. Whether they're doing it or not, I guess at this point we're taking on faith that they're not, but I'm absolutely convinced that if the NSA cared to monitor this phone call, even though it's not a traditional circuit-switched or digitally encoded conversation, it's a packet network, they're more than capable of doing so. As far as that capability goes and why the NSA feels like they need this information, there was a story on NPR today that I would encourage people to give a listen to. They interviewed Republican Representative Mac Thornberry, and he's a part of one of the committees that was getting testimony today from the NSA. And he made the comment very explicitly in that interview that the reason that the NSA needs to collect this information is because the network providers do not. Again, that is a statement either of an extremely unbelievable level of ignorance about how the technology and how these businesses operate, or it's an outright obfuscation of the truth in order to defend what I suspect he agrees with, is a policy at the NSA that gives them the opportunity to eavesdrop and capture this data without a court order. And when they do get court orders, the FISA court is 100%, it's never denied a request, at least as far as we know. All this adds up to something that I think puts us at some jeopardy in terms of a level of privacy and liberty in what we do and who we associate with and how we live our lives. But to an earlier caller's point, it's corporate America who knows who we are and what we do. And without them, the government doesn't have really a whole lot of access to us, at least in our digital lives. And having spent some time in the media and advertising business, I could go on to the point of boredom to explain how it is that, yes, depending on what you do online and how careful you are about your digital life, there is absolutely nothing that you're doing that is a secret to your internet service provider, to the destination websites that you go to, and to the advertisers who pay for the privilege of having access to everything that you're doing on a moment-by-moment basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the listeners who can't understand why this is a problem, that would be those people who were okay with this when Bush was president and they're okay with it now. And I guess you could say that although I don't have strong feelings, that's kind of where I stand. But this is something I heard on Meet the Press I was able to watch it last night, two nights ago on the rerun in an airport when I had a flight at 6 a.m. I was able to watch it at midnight. But anyway, what they said is that when you have this kind of a surveillance state instituted, that it's very easy for that to then slide into a kind of a police state, sort of Orwellian kind of eavesdropping, where political thought is policed by the government. And so there are some people who flip-flopped on this. Sean Hannity most famously was so easy to demonstrate. I'm just muting you, Greg, for background noise. It's so easy to demonstrate Sean Hannity, but many of us, I think, have changed our position based on the level to which we trust the government. And you know what? Governments change hands. So you should probably, as most of our callers have said tonight, look at the issue, not at who is in the White House right now, and ask yourselves, where do we want to draw the line in our search for absolute security that will never be hit by another terrorist attack and all that stuff? Where do you want to draw the line? I mean, some people really want to crack down on crime, and they don't have a problem with what I think Joseph brought up, that you have law enforcement who's investigating, you know, car theft, somehow getting access to this stuff and what's going on there. But there are some people who would say, oh, I want those criminals arrested because I'm never going to carjack. I'm never going to steal a car. I'm never going to plan a terrorist attack. So what do I have to lose if the government is spying on our phone calls and on our web communications? Well, I think that's the answer in a nutshell, is that there's a slippery slope, I suppose. Governments do change hands. A government that you don't trust very much could one day be in power. We could have another terrorist attack, and people could usher in a government that is authoritarian and wants to stay in power. And so if law enforcement is an instrument of the government, has access to your private information, and then you have a government that thwarts our Constitution and thwarts the law in order to stay in power, and you know most of our administrations have done that to some degree, well, maybe I'll step back from that statement. Some of our administrations have done that, thwarted the Constitution in order to try to stay in power. Then you have people who will have access to your information, and it may not be you, but it would be the country you live in that would be transformed. Greg, what do you think about that?
I don't think there's any denying that one of the slippery slopes that this brings our attention back to, that we seem to have lost focus on, some of us have. I railed against the Patriot Act when it first was passed. I opposed it for precisely this kind of reason. It's not that I don't trust government. I don't trust individuals in government that can abuse the power and the authority that we grant them through the electoral process. And we, as an electorate, are pretty imperfect when it comes to making good decisions, depending on what side of the fence you might stand on. You can make that case whenever the pendulum swings. I don't like the idea of President Bush authorizing unwarranted wiretaps. I'm no less a fan of the FISA court granting the NSA under the Obama administration that same capability, glossing it over with a FISA court approval in the interest of some sort of a check and balance that we are not privileged to know anything about, still strikes me as dangerous and fraught with all sorts of threat, depending on how things progress in this country in the future. I'd like to be more optimistic about it, but it's a little hard to do that right now.
Oh, thank you. Well, you guys are informing me. You're moving me on this issue. I'm going to keep you on, Greg. We're going to go to Bobby. And the reason I want to keep you on is because you posted something to the chat room that has to do with what's happening in North Carolina. And I know Bobby's really interested in that issue. Bobby, I'll give you your choice. What do you want to comment on, NSA or North Carolina?
NSA for the moment. It is quite a sobering issue. Good evening, everybody. And I have been speaking about it since it's come up, and I am one of those people who was opposed to the Patriot Act from the beginning. I had top secret clearance in the military under Ronald Reagan. I understand how this works. FISA, of course, was promulgated by the legislature in 1978. And, you know, as far as being safe is concerned, and as far as terrorism is concerned, why is it, and I ask all people to tell me why, in a balanced view, why it is necessary to remove due process from the process? You know, it seems to me more often than not, especially when it comes to eroding, I'll use the word eroding, or restricting the rights that we're supposed to have protected by our founding documents, that the way that they do it more often than not is by the caveat of legitimate government interests, which is exactly what they did in the DNA case, for example. So basically what they're saying is that our government doesn't have the ability to protect us unless it removes due process from the formula. That's ridiculous. They certainly could do it before 1978. They certainly could do it since 1978. The fact that the president now, to his credit a little bit, is using the actual FISA court to do this is actually backtracking away from the Patriot Act procedure, which removed that little bit of due process that was left, which, of course, was initiated by the Patriot Act. As I've been discussing recently, all the Patriot Act is, in my view, is an impermissible expansion of the executive, where the legislative allowed the executive to lobby it for this expansion and agreed to it, and the court signed off on it on the basis of legitimate government interest. And this is not the first time that this kind of expansion has been going on. We are supposed to be a government that is balanced by three sides. And when you allow one side to be expanded beyond what was intended, and by doing that you are restricting the rights that were supposed to be protected to the individuals in this country. That's what happened. That's why it was supposed to be set up that way, in my view. So it is completely dangerous. And of course, the Patriot Act didn't just expand the FISA court. It expanded three different sections of already established legislation to allow the executive to just do it without due process. So, and that's all that happened here. Nothing else happened here, and they use the excuse of we have to be safe in terrorism, and now they're saying how many things that they've saved, and I don't understand why they couldn't save us without leaving due process in there, considering that if you just leave FISA the way it was, it still was secret. We never got to see what was going on for that purpose. It was still done ex parte like indictments and probable cause warrants are. There aren't two sides of that argument. But it created a due process record where the government could actually prove if they arrested somebody, if they killed somebody, that they actually did it. So I'm glad this argument is happening. I totally agree that it is polarized, again, from a partisan standpoint. And yes, we can always bring it into even the racial standpoint from the conversation that you were having earlier, which was well stated by the gentleman, well stated by you. You guys covered it pretty much all the way around. That general's name is Nathan, by the way. So they're taking advantage of it politically like they always do. I will disagree, though, that it is necessary to have corporate America provide this service for our government. I believe our government is quite capable of doing it. I just don't think they have to because corporate America is so good at it. And, of course, everything goes back to money. The description of how the corporate America does it by a couple of the previous quotes is absolutely dead on target. Absolutely. We all know that. You know, if you think about it, when you walk into a restaurant and you've been there before and they have your name, well, they know what you spent, they know what you like, the waiter will come up and say, do you want the same drink as you had before? This stuff goes on all the time. Absolutely. So the danger here is that you're expanding the power of the executive to do whatever they want with the excuse of we got to keep you safe.
Well, that was Patrick's point, that it's a coffee party issue because we're talking about the danger of corporate power. I'm going to bring you back on, Bobby, just meaning you, because you had a strange sound that sort of actually sounds like the additional noise that a round table record player adds to a recording. But anyway, Patrick was saying that it's this exchange of information between the corporate infrastructure and the government infrastructure that is the real danger here. So I think you and Patrick's still with us. He may want to respond. I'll come back to him. I'm going to come back to Greg and Joe before the show is over as well. But I just want to make one point, and that is that I don't think anybody is saying that it's an either-or proposition. They can't keep us safe unless they're allowed to do this, or they can't keep us safe unless they can go around the courts or go around the legislature and the law enforcement executive branch of government. I think what they're saying is that, you know, we can't stop all the terrorist attacks. We can stop a percentage more of them this way, and we would stop a percentage less of them that way. And as a people, we need to make a choice. And, you know, as with the Newtown Massacre, and this is another one where I was kind of on the fence when we started doing radio shows about it, and you guys helped to move me to be able to take a position on it, a stronger one. But it's like, you know, you ask the statistical question, is like, what are the chances I'm going to be caught in a gun massacre or someone I love? What are the chances I'm going to be caught in a terrorist attack or someone that I love? And so then you ask yourself, well, these policies will reduce that percentage chance for me. Well, so what? It goes from 0.01 to 0.05. Okay, whatever. It doesn't really matter to me. But if you care at all about your fellow Americans, and you also take into consideration, as I said earlier, the psychological impact of terrorist attacks, when people do violence against us because of a political goal, right? Because politics leads to more than just, prosecutions and trials and jail time, right? An act of political violence is often a precursor to war. We had a civil war here because of acts of political violence. The South didn't like the outcome of a presidential election and fired upon a federal naval base. So that's why it's so terrifying, because that kind of violence leads to more violence, and we all know that. And I think it's terrifying to feel that there are people out there who just want to kill Americans, period, not military Americans, not Americans who settle overseas, not members of the State Department, just Americans, any old American. That's terrifying. And so what they're saying is that we could stop more of these. We could stop more of these attacks if you let us do this without the courts. Or basically, in the either or here is, if you let us search metadata, including your emails and your Facebook posts, we can stop more of them. And then I think that our leaders should acquiesce in saying that is your choice to make, American people, and we will execute the law as you ask. I think that's where we need to go, and I think everyone has been in agreement pretty much on who's called in that we're glad that we're having this conversation. And so I think that's why we should probably not all be in the "we hate Snowden" camp. So let me see if... let me see if Bobby wants to respond, and then I'll come back to
you. I do, Eric. I will say to you one of the comments you made. When the Patriot Act was first brought up, that is exactly what they said they wanted to do. They wanted to eliminate due process. It actually came out of their mouth. It was one of the reasons why the ACLU and Russ Feingold and me and a whole bunch of other people were talking about it. They couldn't believe that they were saying that, well, we're just going to go rummage through wherever we want to and not even have to go use the secret court to do it. We're going to confiscate money without even having to go get a warrant to do it. That is exactly what they said. So when it was to be reauthorized in 2006, it came out that was, in fact, exactly what they were doing. And so what? They went through the vote, and they all stuck with it because, you know, it's unpatriotic. If you vote against it, it's like it was the Iraq War, in my view, one of the things that happened. And then when they reauthorized it in 2011, the vote essentially was the same. Now, absolutely corporate America is involved in this in some way, but when you allow this kind of process to happen, you are basically saying whenever the government can come up with a legitimate government interest argument that they should prevail, which is, again, why I mentioned the analogy of the DNA case. That is the whole reason why they won that case. And I think that the analysis is being broadened to a ridiculous level. I get the fact that you shouldn't be able to yell fire in a movie theater because it's a legitimate government interest in stopping that kind of a panic to restrict free speech from doing it. But they have taken that argument to the extreme. So now, you know, unless the law is repealed, this is where we are and this is where we're going, and it is not going to stop here, because anytime they want to come up with a way to eliminate due process, they now have established that ruling and that history to win in another way, no matter what subject it is, and that is as important as anything that's going on.
Well, I guess we all have reason to hope that we can avert that what Bobby in Atlanta presented as an inevitability because of the 2008 election, which did switch the parties in the White House. And so you have the political actors and you have the political news channels and all that stuff who are going to say what they say. But now, because of that switch, there are people across the political spectrum who have received media content telling them to be worried about this stuff in different turns. And in different ways, but maybe there would be. I think there likely will be some barriers before we get to that police state. If that's what you meant to say, Bobby, it may not be. Let me go to Patrick, and then Janine. I see you in the chat room. It sounds like you got some strong opinions. We haven't had a woman on this show tonight, which always bugs me. So I encourage you to call in, Janine. Also, I'm running out of battery, so you might need to help me. Okay, Patrick. I can't find my charger. Patrick, did you want to respond to what Bobby had to say?
Yeah, Bobby, good background stuff. Again, I just point out the fact that the stuff's going to go on. You know, it's going to happen no matter what, and it's going to happen even faster. I think there was an article in Forbes magazine today where they're moving way beyond cookies now, because cookies can be erased in your computer, and they're now moving to what's called fingerprinting, where they're looking at the kinds of things you do on your computer, and that will actually identify you. And actually, the more you try to fix your computer, the more that identifies you. So they're, you know, and this is mostly a marketing thing. So the marketeers in the world are really reaching out and trying to understand, and I get it, they're trying to understand why people are buying things and how their campaigns are going and that kind of thing. But it can be used by government, again, to begin to, you know more about, just like you know more about what you're buying, to know more about what, you know, who's interacting with the computer, who's interacting with their smartphone or tablet. So that stuff is going to increase, and I think this is the right time to talk about it, because we do need to have safeguards. I know the NSA was talking today about some program where they may go to a two-person system where, you know, no one can be alone and looking at a computer screen and doing things on their own. There has to be almost like a buddy system where you're in teams and you are responsible for each other, and you know, there are teams of people above you as well. So it stops the sort of lone ranger out there doing their own thing with your information, which could easily happen. So I think the more they start to think about this and put some more safeguards in place, we do know it's going to happen. But we do, like Bobby says, we do need to have some things in place that it's been going on before. I mean, it was this kind of stuff was being done when people had telegraph messages. They were actually capturing, accepting telegraph messages and you know, looking through who was talking to who and what words were used. So, and right here in Atlanta, there's a huge naval base, and people ask, why is the Navy in Atlanta? There's no water here, really. It's a listening system. It's a listening base. I think they use it some for takeoffs and landings, but it's mostly a listening post, listening to the world, especially overseas. They're listening to conversations and trying to look for keywords. So it's everywhere.
Thank you, Patrick. That is the argument that the NSA is making, that they're using American companies which service the world to search for data on international terrorists, some of whom will have links to American citizens or will be contacting American citizens. That is what they're saying. We're going to go back to Greg and then back to Joe. And I'll just add one little tidbit to lighten things up a little. I'm a big fan of those mystery shows where, you know, there's a killing at the beginning and then they show how the forensic detectives figured out who did it. And I got to tell you, every time I see the part where they look at what they've been Google searching and they've been looking for ways to poison your wife, and then they bring the person to justice, I'm never upset about that. I'm actually sort of glad that you can look up somebody's Google searches. But that's, of course, after obtaining a warrant in order to bring their computer into the police station. Greg in Pittsburgh, do you want to respond to Bobby or Patrick, both from Atlanta? And by the way, Georgia is one of the states that gets the middle ground email invitation. The 50 states are split up between the four radio shows, and Georgia is one of our main participating states, as is Pennsylvania. Greg in Pittsburgh, did you want to comment?
I only to kind of add and reinforce the notion that the idea of taking advantage of technology in order to keep America safe, I, in principle, really don't have much of an argument with. It's when the aspect of due process is no longer a necessary part of determining whether or not a government official has access to that information, and when that due process becomes something that is so secretive that we no longer have any idea that it's actually being done with an eye towards an actual justifiable need, then, you know, I think we've gone over a line at that point in which we're not going to stop technology. That's going to continue to march on. And I can't remember his name, but the point made just recently about marketers who are leading that charge, that is not going to slow down. That's only going to get faster and better for their purposes. But if what we're most concerned about with is what can happen from a governmental and legislative perspective when our information is too easily, too readily available without proper due process, that's when I think we need to be worried about and concerned with who it is that we're sending to our state capitals and to Washington, D.C., and what they tell us once they get there, and the need for us to hold them accountable. And that's where I think, in fact, the media is falling down in a big way. Not to segue too far off, but the story that was done on NPR today about the Birmingham riots 50 years ago was really interesting. Publications like the New York Times were making that above-the-fold front-page stories while the Birmingham newspapers weren't covering it at all. Media manipulation is clearly not a new idea, and the information age was supposed to empower us as citizens to be better informed. I think in a lot of cases, unfortunately, it's created bubbles of comfort in which we don't have to do, and we don't have to listen to anybody who doesn't reinforce our preconceived notions or our beliefs, and those bubbles can be really impenetrable. And I was really disappointed in today's interview of Mac Thornberry when he made the comment that the technology companies don't keep this data, so the NSA has to, that the interviewer did not challenge him on that point, didn't actually even say something as simple and now as, frankly, as colloquial as big data to this guy. How do you explain the concept and marketing of big data if your proposition is that the NSA is the one who has to hold this information? They're the ones who have to keep the haystack that then needs to be searched for the needle, because it would be impossible, in his words, impossible for a phone call to be suspicious, for the Tsarnaev brothers' phone number to be the source of a search that would go back into historical records at the phone company, because the phone company doesn't keep those records per Mac Thornberry. It's, again, I'll just repeat what I said before. It's an incredible demonstration of an absolute ignorance about the technology, or it's an outright lie. It's one of those two. And we need to hold our elected officials accountable every time we go into the voting booth when it comes to that kind of thing.
I think that would have to be the number one thing I've learned from you all during this show, and that is that the way that the media has presented this, it's sort of funny. It's like there's so many things on the news. They're like, you know, could your Kool-Aid be poisoning your children? Or is the glue that you use safe? You know, there are all these things that are going to make the person go, oh, what? And the way that they're presenting the story is kind of, I don't know. I mean, I've only gotten bits and pieces of it because I've been moving around the country and that sort of thing. But it seems like they're saying, could the government be reading your emails? Is the way they're presenting this to us. But really the question is, shall the government remove due process before reading your emails is where we are right now, because technology has moved from the telegraph to the internet. The government obtained telegraphs. The government spied on phone calls, and of course the government has now moved into internet metadata. We shouldn't be shocked or surprised about that. The question is a question of due process, and all of you guys have brought that up, and I thank you for that, because it got through my thick head what the real issue is here. I'm going to go back to Joe Pomponio to see if he had any thoughts as we're winding down the show. Joe?
Yeah, Eric, just if I could, a couple. Okay. Regarding, well, Solipat, yeah, I'm basically, I guess I could say, in agreement with him. The only thing I point out about him, he brought up the girlfriend earlier with the pole dancing, blah, blah, blah. She's missing. Okay? That says something to me, but I'll let that go. Now, with regard to things like due process, if I understand the laws, and I'm not going to pretend to be a lawyer, if we are keeping data. Now, I spoke to a friend at AT&T. Now, here's where I have to disagree. I'm to understand they keep their records for 90 days, maybe 120, okay, as far as billing. We're dealing with phone numbers. We're dealing with email addresses. We're not dealing with content. Okay, my understanding to them, it's a lot easier to clear out everybody except those people that have delinquent bills. I may be wrong on this. I don't work for AT&T, but my understanding is this information is not kept. Again, I have to briefly go back to the fact that I've done credit investigation work, skip tracing, trying to find people that owed money, okay? If, per se, this leads into another segment, another brief thing I'll say, if I had access to phone records, and they are available publicly, okay? There are phone books out there that detective agencies buy with names, addresses, and phone numbers. Okay, you can do reverse lookups, but these the information expires and has to be renewed. Okay, they don't do this; they just print new books. Okay, my feeling is, as I said earlier, what they've done is they've taken investigation to the 10th power. Okay, if you haven't done this type of work, it's a little hard to comprehend. Now, the safeguards are the key. And I don't want to keep harping back to this, but if you just check out Thomas Drake, okay, he alluded to this before this nonsense ever started, and it would cost a lot less. The key is they gave it to private industry, okay? I respect capitalism. I understand you want to make a buck, but I'll tell you right now, if you want information on someone and you know an IT that works for NSA and is not part of the federal government, you can buy them. The part about the two-party, need-to-know two-party, that's what I worked under. But I was Air Force. I was military. I was government. You want to bring these things back into government, my feeling is you'll have a lot more control on it. They're also covered by the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which goes beyond civilian law. These people know to behave themselves. If you're going to give it to a 29-year-old that's living in Hawaii in a nice area, okay, and he has access to this, one has to wonder, okay, what he might do with it. Now, this is a private corporation that employed him, all right? If he were military, and I realize how people might feel about the military. If he were military, I seriously doubt he would have made decisions that he made. Now, with regard to the corporations, need to know, WebBot. Okay, when you deal with cyber, I'd recommend all of our people to check out WebBot. This is a system that was set up by investors, and this thing examines the world. And what they look for are key words that are being said. Okay? I have a feeling, I can't prove it, I don't work there, that the NSA is using something similar to that. If they tap into a conversation, that is what they're looking for, words. And if private sector can do it for investment, how do you explain that government can't do it? Okay? We're in an area that should have been discussed 12 years ago, okay? If we're going to do it now, that's good. Personally, take it out of the headlines. This is not something that you want on the front pages every day. We have too many other issues that affect the American public and our standard of living and way of life to get sidetracked by this and take away from the issues that affect us most. And I'm hoping in the future we can move on to the potential Syria threat. Okay? But, yeah, I mean, okay. That would be it.
All right. So I got three things from that. Closing comment from Joe. One is, next show should be about Syria. Two is, and I think this is very interesting, he mentioned Thomas Drake, and I'm going to look that up as soon as the show is over, warned about this happening. And what Joe says, having worked inside the military, and I believe, Joe, you also worked in the post office for a time, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And
okay.
I can tell you now, if you want security, I know it's snail mail. They can't go into that mail. Get monitored
mm-hmm.
almost every step of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what he was saying is that in the government and in the military, there's a higher code of conduct. Maybe in part because there are more severe punishments for those who break that code of conduct, and that the problem that we have with the way that our surveillance state has been constructed post 9/11 is that we made sure that the corporatist class could get a cut in the profits. In the process by which government extracts money from the people and gives it to the really, really rich people, the problem is that we have private companies doing the surveillance, and that people who work for private companies, you know, they're clock watchers, right? Most of them hate their jobs. They can't wait to move on. They don't have the kind of loyalty to their companies the way that a military personnel might have to their country, or that all of us have to our country. And the government workers have when they're working for their country. And so the danger here is that we've privatized government surveillance, and that leaves us open to all kinds of of misuse, abuse of this information that could happen at the individual level, which, based on the people who called today, is more of a concern than abuse at, you know, from some sort of all-powerful Orwellian despot. I'm going to let Bobby come back in and see if he wants to add to any of that before we wind up the show. Bobby?
Interesting thought from Joe. I don't necessarily agree that the punishments of the UCMJ are necessarily that much greater than they are in the civilian world. The difference between the UCMJ and the civilian world, there's plenty of due process in UCMJ. You still have the right to remain silent. They do not have to try you with 12 people in the jury. There are a few other caveats that go on, and then there are some interesting codifications in the UCMJ, like the general article, which basically says for everything not covered in this code, we can come up with, we'll use Article 134 to cover it. And then, of course, they also have the conduct unbecoming, which is not something that's in the civilian world. But as far as the punishments are concerned, they're really no different than anywhere else. As far as the loyalty is concerned, I would agree. And certainly some of the other aspects that you and him described there, I would agree. And certainly we need to do a show about Syria. But I just want the process back in the process. I don't want to see the arbitrary and capricious handling and the expansion of executive power. And we all know how I feel about money in politics and corporate personhood, which, again, I believe has a lot to do with our problems. Corporate personhood first, money second. So, I mean, that would be my input on all of that.
You know, this stuff about the way companies troll our communications and then sell it and all that stuff. I mean, it is annoying that people have been calling me and I didn't give them their number and they're trying to sell me, like, you know, classes to further my, communication stuff. But here's the thing. It's like, well, I did create a Facebook account. I did create a Google account. You know, I give my number out, you know, without even thinking about it. Every time I buy something, they ask for my phone number, and I just give it to them. I mean, I shouldn't do that if I'm that worried about the sort of commercial exploitation of my data, but I do. And it brings to mind an idea. If I were an entrepreneur, I would run with this. There really should be a new service to come up that absolutely 100% guarantees they will fight the government, they will go to court, they will do whatever it takes, but your data will remain private. And maybe that way people can have the choice. You know, the convenience of swimming in the super, you know, internet stream of a Facebook over a Google where all your friends already are, or if it's that important to you, use another service that has more of a brand of we're going to fight to make sure that no one gets your data. What do you think about that, Bobby?
Well, I agree. And, you know, you made me think of something that Greg said earlier that is so on point on when he was talking about the interview with Mr. Thornberry and how he's right, that basically it's either a lie or ignorance. And with the way our elected officials are, ignorance is easy to believe, but I don't think that's the case. I just think it's an outright lie. And I think your point that you just made is totally on point, absolutely. Did your battery die? Eric, are you still with us?
No, it did not die, but I was muted. Sorry about that. Okay.
I thought maybe we had to rescue you, which would have been fine.
sorry. I muted myself. Hey, Greg, we were just talking about you. Did you want to respond?
I'd encourage everyone to familiarize themselves with the idea and the concept of big data. Not to pick on you, Joe, but your friend at AT&T might be convinced that they don't have immediate access to call detail records longer than 6 months ago. But I can assure you, AT&T, Verizon, Microsoft, every organization that has data is keeping it, and they are aggregating it, they are analyzing it, and they are using it to their advantage. Just Google big data, pick any of the top couple of searches that you find that come up on there. Take a look at the possibilities that exist today. And to your point, Eric, we give up a lot of our information very much voluntarily. And then, you know, kind of want it both ways. We want the world to know. We've really become pretty narcissistic. We want the whole world to know what we're doing on Facebook, except for the government, because then they might, you know, keep me from doing something that I want to do or somehow infringe upon my ability to connect with someone else, et cetera. It's a difficult situation, but it's not something that's going to get easily solved. The balance between security and privacy is only going to get trickier. The more data that is collected about us, the more we live our lives online and digitally. And you know, if you find a safe and secure Facebook, you might find yourself there all by yourself, Eric. No one else will be there with you because a billion people are on the other one. That would be an interesting idea, but. Those are my final thoughts, I guess, is Google big data, educate yourself on what that actually means from a corporatist standpoint. You'll begin to understand and appreciate that there's really no data point too insignificant to not be collected and analyzed about you.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, and thank you, Greg from Pittsburgh. Thank you, Bobby in Atlanta, Patrick in Atlanta. Joe in New York, Albany, New York, all of you for calling in. I'm going to end this show with one last comment, and that is just that the reason I use Facebook is to get the message out of what I'm thinking about politics. I really don't use it much at all for any other purpose. I'm not that freaked out about it the way other people seem to be. And, you know, I've been having some fun with the way that there's been a partisan flip-flop on things. But for those of us who have been paying attention, it is kind of funny. And I'll just, to lighten it up, I'll bring up the airport surveillance. So when Bush was president and they came up with these things that could see the shape of your body and figure out if there was a weapon on there, nobody made a story out of that. No one did that. Is the government peeping at your breast? Nobody created that story, right, until Barack Obama was elected. And then all of a sudden Fox News is pummeling us with the government is intruding upon your private parts and all this stuff, trying to make a story out of it. So I find that to be really amusing. And this is sort of similar. It relates to security. You know, I fly a lot. I'm in the air a lot. And I frequent the cities that would be the targets of terrorist attacks. And I think human life is one of the most valuable, it's the most valuable thing on Earth. And so I began the show maybe a little bit to the right of where I am now. You guys have moved me some, but I was okay with this when Bush was president, and I'm okay with it now. That's sort of kind of where I sit right now, but it's an ongoing conversation. Thank you very much for listening to The Middle Ground on Coffee Party Radio. We are a all-volunteer, powered by donations organization. I just put into the chat room a really great program where you can donate to the Coffee Party and receive a coupon equal to the amount of your donation from restaurant.com. Restaurant.com patronizes or they bring attention to locally owned restaurants, not the corporate restaurants, so you can find that jewel of a great restaurant that's locally owned in your neighborhood with the restaurant.com coupon. If you're not in the chat room, just go to coffeepartyusa.com and click on Free the Elected. Free the Elected is our new campaign to try to get money out of politics. So I'm Eric Beiler for Michael Charney, who comes back for the first show of July. This is The Middle Ground on Coffee Party Radio. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Time for tonight. Thanks for joining us, and please share your comments and suggestions with us at conservatives.coffeepartyusa.com, where you can follow The Middle Ground and participate in the 99% media. Our theme was written and performed by The Consultants. and produced by Van Gabriel. Please join us again next week on The Middle Ground. Until then, be wise, be strong, and be heard.